Good afternoon and good morning and good evening and welcome. I'm really happy to be with you guys. And I also wanted to say that I realized as I was preparing this class that we actually need another class. So I just want to say right up front that what I'd like to do is schedule a bonus class for March 7th, which is 2 weeks from today. Deb doesn't know this yet, so Deb, I hope you're not jumping out of your skin. But the reason being that because tonight's class is so focused on practices, and I don't want to shortchange it because they are really great practices, we actually need another class to discuss self-realization in the recognition tradition because it's such an important part of the process, obviously, and because it is kind of unique. So if that's okay, I'm assuming that it is okay, we'll have another class. If you can be there in person, fantastic, on March 7th from 5 to 7. And if you can't be there in person, of course, we'll be able to you'll be able to download it. And also, this gives us 2 more weeks to do the practices that will be in the homework assignment and to discuss things on the listserv. And also, we won't have to leave the Sangam quite so quickly. Because like you, I love this Sangam. I love the discoveries that we make, that each of you share on the listserv. I love the fact that so many of you have formed relationships with each other, and of course, the relationships that I've formed with so many of you. And I love that the Sangam, in different ways, keeps on going year after year. In a certain sense, we've managed to create a group practice setting that we can enter and leave, but which somehow doesn't dissolve. So I'd like to just make a couple of general statements, and then we'll chant and enter into our first meditation, and then we'll be practicing with this last group of sutras. If I had to characterize this process that we're in, I would say that, from my point of view, it has 2 goals or 2 intentions. First, of course, to understand and practice as deeply as possible the non-dual traditions of Tantra, especially the Tantra of Kashmir, and which has tendrils all over India and East Asia. Tantra is actually a pan-Asiatic tradition. Taoism is a tantric tradition. Much of Tibetan Buddhism is tantric. And the practices and the understanding of Tantra has kind of seeped into many of the sects and practice groups in India itself. So that we could say that some of the fundamental understandings about Tantra, especially the understanding that the body contains secret doorways into consciousness, have really been, you know, kind of infiltrated Eastern traditions over the last 1,000 years or so. Part of what I hope that you've understood more deeply in this class is what are the fundamentals of the practice of self-recognition through Tantra, of the ways in which both the body and the mind coordinate to give us an experience not only of limitation, but also of the avenues and doorways into opening and expanding into the deepest truth of ourselves, which is that we are not in any way limited. So, and the second purpose of this class and of course all the satsangs that we do together is really to support sadhana with practices and teachings that help all of us stay connected to the awareness bliss at our heart and also help to dissolve the karmas and samskaras that hold us back in the most effective way. Since Tantra, I believe, supports the integration of body, mind, spirit in the most efficient way, really, of, I think, any tradition. We work with, in so many different ways, the core tantric understandings, about life in sadhana. And one more thing which should be obvious by now is that very early in my process, I discovered how powerful it is to actually directly work with a text. As many of you know, and as many of you have shared, the teachings of the Pratibhigna Hridayam are actually part of contemporary yoga. They've become part of the language of contemporary yoga in many, many ways, which means that a lot of teachers teach this without actually referencing the text, often without really knowing where they come from. And this is especially true among the teachers like Richard Miller and Rupert Spira and Shiva Ray and others who are familiar with Kashmir Shaivism, who actually reference Kashmir Shaivism, but are not actually teaching directly the texts, which is great and fabulous, and you know, part of the way in which these old scriptures get reinterpreted in a contemporary way, which makes them, of course, ever more accessible. At the same time, when you dive into the text itself, into the texts like the Pratibhigna Hridayam, the Spandakarikas, the Vijnana Bhairava, and others, the Bhagavad Gita, you really begin to understand the fullness of the teachings, the context of them. And you also start to feel the deep authority of the sages who taught them originally. And I find that when you have a direct encounter with a sage like Kshemaraja or Abhinavagupta, you know, who lived in the 10th century or before, that is, who lived a long time ago, that's when you start to recognize the universality of these teachings, the fact that they've been spoken and taught for so many centuries, and not only spoken and taught in the Indian tradition, but spoken and taught in other parts of the world as well. You start to grasp that this actually is a pretty good description of what we call truth. And as you recognize that, and I think this is one of the things we especially get from texts, you get a very deep confidence in the truth of what's being said here. In other words, it's not just my authority as a teacher. It's not just the insights that are arising for you. It's that the authority that this description of the truth rests on has been carried over and over again, year after year after year, through lineages, through streams of transmission, and has been distilled down to its essence in texts like this one, and then reimagined, as it were, for the modern age. And I, again, to speak to those of you who are not feeling completely confident about your relationship to the Pratibhigna Hridayam, even if you love it, in other words, to those of you who are finding it abstract or hard to relate to at this point in your life, I just will say that if it's the first time you've come in contact with the text, that the second time you come in contact with it, your relationship will be much deeper, the insights you feel will be much deeper, because it's necessary in order to really, I don't want to say understand, because we can understand it on an intellectual level fairly immediately, but when you take a second look and a third look, when you come back to it in 2 months or a year or several years, you always find things you didn't grasp before becoming more obvious. You get it on a deeper level. In other words, the texts unfold, and they unfold more every time we dive into them. It's kind of like in meditation. Very often when you first start meditating, at least this was true for me, you feel like you're reading about all these great promises of what meditation can show you, but you're not really getting it. And then you keep at it, you keep meditating, and the power in your attention, which is really the driver in meditation, the power in your attention, which is Shakti, penetrates through the layers and layers and layers of coagulated thought forms and conceptual recognitions and understandings that we've accumulated that hide the purity of consciousness from us. And we find that after a while, we can sit in meditation and our attention is plunged into itself. So it's the same with these teachings. They refine our consciousness just by contemplating them. And at the same time, as our consciousness gets more defined, we become more and more able to recognize what I guess we could call the essential psychological truth of the tantric traditions, which is that your mind is simply a contracted version of the big mind, the great mind, the divine mind, what the Tibetan Buddhists call the unobstructed mind, or Rigpa, what the sages of Trika call Chetana. And, of course, in the tantric tradition, we understand that Chetana, as we contemplate it, actually unfolds more and more and more, expands more and more and more, so that we start to know, to realize that the innate cognitive capacity that we call attention is not only the source of thoughts, but is actually the power of the divine inside our inner space, our inner self. And as we get more and more familiar with the aspect of the mind that is deeper than thoughts, that holds thoughts, that that is present even when thoughts are causing suffering, but also when thoughts dissolve. When we start to recognize the open space of consciousness, of citta, of the mind, then we become more and more skilled and creative at using the capacities of the mind, the capacity to pay attention, the faculty of imagination, the ability to self-observe, to observe thoughts. They become vehicles and pathways that help us recognize the freedom of our own consciousness. And the teachings of these traditions are at their core very simple. Everything is consciousness. Consciousness is everything. That which is vast and transcendent limits itself and then becomes a contracted individual. And yet that very contracted individual can self-recognize simply by tuning into what lies at the heart of your own awareness. So these are simple teachings, not easy, but very simple. So this week in this class, we're going to focus mainly on the great 18th sutra of the Pratyabhijna Hridayam, which describes many of the core practices of the tradition. And in order to get there, we're going to move rather quickly through the progression that Kshema Raja offers us in sutras 16 through 18. And we'll come back to some of them next week because, strangely enough, sutra 16 describes the state of self-realization. And it kind of describes self-realization before it describes the practices that we do to get there. So we're going to look at it a little bit today, and then we'll revisit it in 2 weeks in our absolutely final class of this series. Find yourself a posture, a comfortable upright posture. We're going to be chanting, doing our preliminary chants, offering our practice for the benefit of all beings. And then we'll meditate, and we're going to be practicing a meditation. It's actually the meditation we began with 7 weeks ago, and it's the meditation we'll end with at the end of today. It's what I call the primary practice of learning how to discern awareness from all of the risings, the abhasas or appearances within it. In setting your posture, let me suggest that you sit in such a way that you're aware of the triangle formed by your pubic bone in the front and the two sits bones. You want to make sure that you're actually sitting on the sits bones rather than leaning back on the coccyx. But if you bring your awareness from the center of the head down into the triangle formed by the pubic bone and the sits bones, can you find it? There is actually a triangle there. It's a kind of a space that exists in the pelvic cavity formed by the pubic bone and the two sits bones. And when you bring your awareness there to that place and center your awareness there, and then form your posture with the intention that your head and your throat especially will be directly lined up with this triangle, what you might notice is that if you set the base of your posture this way, that you may find that you're sitting a little more forward or a little more back than you ordinarily do. In my case, it's a little bit more forward, because most of us, when we sit, we may be aware of the sits bones, but we don't tend to tune into the pubic bone and to the relationship of the pubic bone and the sits bones. And this practice that I just gave you, which, full disclosure, is something I recently learned from a Feldenkrais practitioner that has kind of changed my posture fairly radically. It actually shifts your alignment. And for those of you who are practicing with the central channel, the Sushumna Nadi, which we will be doing today as well, it actually becomes much easier to find the central channel in the middle of the body, the inner spinal cord, the subtle spinal cord, when you're in this alignment, because it also, of course, aligns your spine. Settling yourself at the base of the posture by being aware of the triangle, feeling the support of the chair, inhaling down such that the inhalation begins to settle your attention in the core of the pelvis at the pelvic floor, and then exhaling with the feeling that the outgoing breath draws your awareness upward through the center of the body, through the crown. Let your shoulder blades melt onto the back. Let your chest lift and open. Take a deep breath in, and then let the breath out. And another one. We'll begin with the dedication, and then we'll chant. So you can repeat silently after me. We ask that our practice be dedicated for the benefit of all beings and for the earth. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. May we have equanimity beyond grasping, hatred, and dullness. And may we know the equality of all that lives. And now, with the help of Scott's beautiful voice, we'll chant the two sets of mantras to Shiva as the actor who performs the five great functions, and to Kali, who is the power that performs them.
Namah Shivaya Satatam Pancha Kritya Vidhayine Chidananda Gana Swatma Paramartha Vasne Namah Shivaya Satatam Pancha Kritya Vidhayine Chidananda Gana Swatma Paramartha Vasne Namah Shivaya Satatam Pancha Kritya Vidhayine Chidananda Gana Swatma Paramartha Vasne. Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute Om Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute Om Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute Om Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute
So if you like, you can refresh your posture. Your eyes are closed. The breath is flowing, sweetened by the mantras, which along with opening our awareness also mingle with the breath and purify our pranas. With your eyes closed, begin to become aware of whatever is arising in the experience being cognized by the senses in this moment. Notice the sound of my voice, paying attention to the content just enough to follow the instructions, but mostly feeling the inner sensation of sound of the human voice. Noticing how sounds come in and affect your inner experience. And that when the sound stops, there's actually a sensation, a set of sensations that arises in the silence. And with loving attention, notice the different sensations that come to your attention in the body. the touch of your clothes, the wetness in your mouth, the feeling of moisture in your armpits, perhaps, or the sense of coolness on your face. See if you can be present to the sensations without categorizing them or naming them. Feel the touch of the breath, a slight sensation as it flows in the nostrils. See if you can follow the sensation of breath flowing down through the nasal cavity, through the throat. See if you can feel how the breath expands the lungs. Let your attention cycle through these sensory experiences, tuning into the impact of the sounds, feeling into sensations. For instance, the sensation of the air against your hands and your face. The sensation of breath meeting the body. And see if you can also be aware of the flow of thoughts. How a thought comes up, stays for a while, and then dissolves, goes somewhere. And if you give it attention, it might stay for longer, but eventually that thought dissolves, it melts into the background. Where does it go? See if as your attention cycles between sound and sensation and breath, and the recognition of thoughts arising, staying for a while, dissolving, you can turn your awareness back onto itself, turn the attention back onto itself. And just become aware of the field, the background, the substratum of the mind, of the citta, the energy field within which sound, sensation, thought are experienced as arising and subsiding. See if you can cycle between the recognition of all the different experiences that are brought in through the senses and the awareness that holds them and knows them. and you can open your eyes. In this part of the Pratyabhijñātradhyayam, we begin to become aware or begin to be made aware of what is perhaps the great hidden secret of tantric teachings, which is the fact that Kundalini Shakti, which is the individual aspect of the primordial creative Shakti known as Chitti, we begin to be asked to pay attention to Kundalini Shakti and her effect on our lives. Because at the heart of the tantric understanding is the understanding that it actually is Kundalini. It's the awakened or activated Kundalini inside our awareness. That is the power that allows the unfolding of the enlightened or awakened states and allows us to merge into the awareness that is going to then merge into the transcendent awareness that we call Shiva Shakti. So in Sutra 15, we looked at how the innate Shakti, the Bala, as it's called, Bala meaning strength, within awareness, once we've tuned into it, how that strength expands consciousness until we are able to see the unity of all things, until our sense of limitation is kind of exploded or dissolved. Now, my read on this sutra is that when Kshema is referring to the innate power, the strength, the bala within awareness, what he's really talking about is Kundalini Shakti. And though I know we, most of us, most of you, are familiar with Kundalini and what she is, I just want to say a word or two about Kundalini awakening because it's kind of crucial to where we're going. The name Kundalini, which means coiled, actually refers to the fact that in an ordinary individual, this powerful, direct, divine energy is curled up. Like I think that the tradition says it's coiled like a serpent, which is why it's called the serpent power. But I think of it as being coiled like a cat. You know how cats and dogs curl themselves into a ring when they go to sleep, when they rest. So what Kundalini really means is the power that coils itself into a circle and goes and rests in the kunda. Kunda means bulb or root. The kunda is the pelvic bowl. It's the actual pelvic floor, which is the top of the Muladhara chakra, and it's a seat of Kundalini, which is going to become important as we unpack Sutra 18. Of course, when the coiled Shakti is activated, it begins to unfold in all of our four bodies through the prana. So it causes spontaneous movements like shaking, spontaneous asana, pranayama, in the physical body, which literally purify the deposits of disease and, you know, unhelpful thinking that get lodged in the physical body. It unfolds in the subtle body through meditative insights, movements of prana, a kind of dramatic shift that happens sooner or later to all of us when Kundalini awakens, which is to say that Kundalini allows the mind to start turning inside. It works in the causal body by clearing karmic impressions and in the supracausal body to unfold our ability to experience the clarity of the pure witness of the ever-present suchness that Kshema Raja calls Chidananda. So in verse 16, he describes a state of self-realization as the state where we become immersed in the bliss of awareness. The verse says, when one discovers this bliss of awareness and stabilizes the realization that awareness is one with the body, even while we are experiencing the body, That state is called Jiva Mukta, or embodied liberation. And what is really significant about this verse, I mean, there's a lot that's significant about it, but what I find really interesting is that what he's really saying is that what we discover in self-realization is the bliss of awareness. Because Kshema, like all non-dual teachers, always wants to remind us that awareness is ever-present. We're never without awareness. Even if we're not aware of awareness, we're nonetheless functioning because of awareness. What we're not always aware of is the bliss. So, and Tantra is what Paul Muller calls a bliss-saturated tradition. I love that phrase, bliss-saturated. In fact, Tantra is kind of smug about the fact that it's all about bliss. The true experience of self-realization is an experience of blissfulness. And, you know, many of us have awakening experiences that don't feel particularly blissful, that are mostly centered on awareness itself. But what he's saying here is that the actual liberation experience in Tantra, in Kashmir Shaivism, is the awakening of that innate bliss, which is the truth, the deep truth of Shakti. When Shakti starts to turn within, when Shakti starts to reveal herself through inward-facing consciousness, that's when we start to experience our own innate bliss. And Kshema says here that it's possible to become so connected to our own awareness with its fullness of bliss that we continue experiencing that bliss and that recognition that everything that's happening in this world is happening inside us. We continue to experience it even when we're living our lives, even when we're completely inside the body, even when we're sick, when we're broke, when we're suffering a big loss, when we're protesting sexual harassment, when we're having an argument with our sweetie, when we're asking our boss for a raise. All of these experiences can be experienced all as arising and subsiding inside awareness. And that's the state that's called embodied liberation, or jiva mukti, the state of being liberated in the body. Most of the yogic traditions believe that in order to be fully liberated, you have to leave your body, that it's not something that we can really experience while we're walking around. Tantra says, no, it is actually possible to experience your complete immersion in the highest consciousness and walk around with your eyes open. And when you do, when you're in the body, when you're experiencing embodied liberation, thoughts may be going on, all kinds of crazy stuff may be going on, but you are poised in the recognition of the bliss of consciousness. And you know, if you've had this experience, that it is really, it is literally mind-blowing. My early experiences after my initial awakening, a lot of them were open-eyed experiences. And the one I remember that, to me, kind of epitomized the state that he's talking about in Sutra 16 was one evening I'd just been in a deep meditation and I was walking through Upper Manhattan, which in the 1970s when this experience happened was not yet gentrified, or it was rather it had fallen out of its initial gentrification and was really, it was a neighborhood full of junkies and garbage and the ever-present possibility of somebody coming up behind you and hitting you over the head and grabbing your wallet. But what I was seeing was everything, the trash in the gutters, the homeless guy muttering to himself as he passed me, the concrete on the pavement, the music coming out of the bodega that I walked past, that it was all shining with light. You're literally shimmering with blissfulness. So this is how a realized being sees the world. I had a little glimpse of it, and I've had glimpses of it ever since. And when I'm really meditating deeply, as I know you guys, many of you guys experience, I can open my eyes and see the world this way for a little while. And what I notice is that as the process unfolds, that ability to see the physical world as being imbued with bliss, even when I'm not having a good time, becomes more and more available. So the tantricas were the first community in India to describe the possibility that one could live in a fully awakened state of open-eyed samadhi. And the greatest saints of India and other traditions as well all agree on the fact that this is this open-eyed samadhi, where you know that you are not different than the Absolute, and that the world itself and everybody in it is not different than the Absolute, is it's the sine qua non of enlightened experience. Shankaracharya, in one of his great texts, says, like a lump of salt merging in the ocean, I have dissolved in the ocean of bliss, and I see bliss wherever I look. Kabir, the poet, who was famous for being both a Hindu and a Muslim mystic, sings a song called Natural Samadhi, Sahaja Samadhi, in which he describes a life in which every sound is a mantra, in which every breath is meditation, and where, without closing his eyes, he's able to see God everywhere. So the fruit of our practice, as we recognize over and over and over again the oneness of our awareness with Shiva Shakti, that you can experience that not only your inner state, but your body itself is bliss. Because I lived for quite a long time with my guru, who was this kind of radically enlightened being, I saw him as he, I saw the way he lived in the world. And it was really as much by watching him as it was by experiencing glimpses myself that I began to get a sense of what it actually means to be a jiva mukta, to be, you know, a naturally enlightened being. My guru had a series of diabetic seizures in 1975, and in the midst of that experience, as he was literally being carried out of his apartment to be placed in an ambulance, he saw one of my friends standing on the street and said to her, my guru is right. It's really true. This bliss never leaves you. In other words, for him, and he said this afterwards, this experience of being close to death, of being, you know, having a very, very dangerous set of seizures and strokes, did not in any way diminish the bliss. And he saw this as a test of how deeply the state was embodied. So in Sutra 16, Kshema holds out the great carrot, telling us that this is what's going to happen to you if you follow the teachings that he's giving you. And part of what the sutra says, because it uses the word labaha, which means unfolding, this sutra implies that this unfolding is a natural thing. It's a natural experience. It's like the unfolding of the bud that becomes the flower. You know, this little tightly coiled bud unfolds and reveals that behind the folds, inside the folds, is the magnificent rose or the magnificent lily. And in the sutras that we're going to talk about more deeply tonight, sutras 17 and 18, Kshema describes in detail how this process takes place. A lot of the details are not in the sutra, they're in the commentaries, which is typical of sutra texts. And one of the things you get from reading Kshema Raja's commentary on his own sutras is how important it is when you're studying these teachings to really look into the commentaries, because that's where the teacher unpacks everything. Sutra 17 can be read on three levels. Sutra 17 says, Madhya Vikashat Chidananda Labaha. And this translation, this is Chris Wallace's translation, to acquire the bliss of consciousness, the center must be expanded. Madhya, the word madhya, which again many of you know, the word madhya means middle or center. Chris translates it actually as the innermost core. So we're going to talk about what that means. The word madhya can be read, as I said earlier, in three ways. First, it describes the mystical process of unfolding. It happens naturally in meditation as we get more and more immersed in our practice. The core of consciousness, the core of us, deeply hidden beneath the folds and veils of thoughts and feelings and concepts, begins to reveal itself more and more as the center of us through our meditation practice. So that's one meaning of the madhya. Another meaning of the word madhya is a particular esoteric tantric practice, which, again, many of us have done. I teach it a lot. It's one of the core practices that I teach. And in this sense, the madhya refers to the mystical fact that the fullness of Chidananda, Shiva Shakti in their totality, can be experienced in the inner space, in the middle of each phase of activity. In other words, if you penetrate deeply enough into the breath, if you can allow yourself to focus on the space between the inhalation, the end of the inhalation and the start of the exhalation, where there's a pause, a stillness, a madhya, then you can plunge into the core of consciousness through the space between the breaths. Similarly, if you can find the place where a thought comes to an end before another thought arises, you find the madhya, the space between one thought and another. Clearly, the madhya is not really a location in time and space. You know, it's the space between, it's the place where time comes to an end and space dissolves. And the third meaning of madhya, the third meaning of the expansion of the madhya is as pure consciousness itself, which is, of course, the deepest meaning. The madhya is the core of pure awareness. St. Augustine said famously that God is a circle with centers everywhere and circumference nowhere. That's what the madhya is. It's the center, the inside of the inside, the secret presence in the heart of reality. And one of the names for madhya is hridaya, which means heart. So it really is the heart. However, in the sutra, the kind of technical way in which this sutra is usually explained is that the word madhya in this sutra refers to the madhya nadi, the central channel, the sushumna, that runs from the coccyx up through the crown in the subtle body as a channel of energy that is considered in the tantras, and I'm saying this in an equivocal way, it's considered in the tantras, let's just take it from that equivocal statement, this is what the tantras tell us is the truth. The central channel, the madhya nadi, the sushumna, is the source from which all our cognitive and biological processes originate. So this is actually a big deal. So, you know, in the physical body, the spinal column is kind of the place where all of our nerves, all of our neurons, the whole nervous system is coordinated around the spinal column, around the spinal cord. All the neural signals that let our limbs move and our lungs breathe, they all flow through the spinal cord, which is, of course, why a spinal cord injury is so serious. The sushumna nadi is the subtle spinal cord. In other words, it's prior to the spinal cord. It's the source of the neural impulses that allow our limbs to move and our organs to function. The prana that flows in the sushumna regulates all of our human functions. And as Kshema says, the Sushumna Nadi is the primary seat of our life force energy, our prana shakti, which is the form that chitti shakti first takes as she is about to manifest the physical world. So I'm telling you this, it's one of the fundamental pieces of yogic lore, and most of you have heard it, especially if you're in, you know, if you're a yoga practitioner. I have to tell you that this piece of information never meant anything to me until I began to experience the opening of the Sushumna Nadi. So if it doesn't mean anything to you, just know that it's a piece of yogic lore that will eventually make sense one of these days. In yogic theory, Shakti, Chitti Shakti herself, inhabits the central channel. And from the central channel, she moves as prana through a network of channels called nadis. There are various texts give different numbers for them. Most texts say there are 72,000 nadis. The tantric texts say there are 720 million of them. They're pretty much the same as the meridian channels in Chinese medicine. So most of you who are familiar with different forms of alternative healing probably know that when the energy flow in the channels or the meridians is blocked or stagnant or disordered, that's when the mind, body and mind becomes diseased. And practices like hatha yoga, pranayama, acupuncture all work with unblocking these channels. But kundalini awakening and meditation in the Sushumna Nadi and the unfolding of the Sushumna Nadi is really the ultimate intervention, in the sense that this is what completely purifies the samskaras and vasanas and vikalpas, that is, the concepts and impressions and kind of karmic residues that we have brought with us into this life from our many past lives. They are lodged, they live in the Sushumna Nadi and have to be kind of released. So when Kundalini unfolds through the Sushumna, these karmic impressions are gradually dissolved, and this is pretty much what the natural sadhana of Tantra is all about. It's about allowing the Kundalini Shakti to unfold the Sushumna Nadi. Most of the practices that we are going to do tonight and during the week are pretty much about that. So, you know, sitting for meditation, once Kundalini has been activated, sitting for meditation day after day, sometimes for months, well, sometimes for years, certainly for months, is what allows these processes to dissolve. It's what allows Kundalini to dissolve the very large number of samskaras that are lodged in the Sushumna. And what I will say is that, again, as you know, someone who's been practicing this for a long time, that there will often be very dramatic experiences where there's an opening or a sense that some big viral load, so to speak, has dissolved. But very often you're not even sure that it's happening until you reach a sort of plateau where you recognize that, oh, I'm different, I'm freer. So Madhya Vikasha in Sutra 17 refers both to the expansion of consciousness that occurs through meditation, sometimes in a single session, sometimes over time, and also to the unfolding of the prana shakti in the central channel. And obviously one of the main practices that allows this unfolding to happen expeditiously is the practice that we do in this class of Sushumna breathing, which happens to be one of the core tantric anava upaya practices. And, you know, as you know, we follow the breath down the center of the body, and you stay with that vertical breathing throughout the process of meditation, and at a certain point, often coordinating the breath with a mantra, which we'll say more about later. But what what will often happen in meditation, and again, many of you experience this, is that at a certain point you start to feel that there's this there's a kind of interiorization in which you feel that your inner body becomes spacious. There's actually a shift of state, and instead of breathing with great effort and trying to keep your attention moving up and down the center of the body, there is actually an experience that you're no longer trying to breathe. What I often use is parked. You're centered in the very middle of yourself, which is a sign that the Madhya Nadi, the Sushumna, has opened and is unfolding. And again, in yogic lore, this is described as the activation of a particular type of prana shakti called the samana prana. It's a very subtle form of breath energy that becomes active in deep states. And when the samana prana is activated and the breath starts unfolding in the Sushumna Nadi, generally speaking, you no longer feel like you're breathing through your nostrils. So the Ida and Pingala Nadis, which are connected to the nostrils and which are the channels through which the breath normally flows, the Ida and Pingala Nadis just stop working, and you're being breathed from inside. It often feels to me when this happens, it's a little bit like that scene in the Narnia books, where the little girl Lucy walks into the wardrobe cabinet, and instead of there being a wall in the back of the wardrobe, there's this whole universe, the kingdom of Narnia, unfolds from the back of the wardrobe. That is a little bit like what it feels like when the Sushumna Nadi opens. It's like you were in your normal awareness, breathing, aware of your body, and suddenly you're just in this expansive inner space. It's like you walked through the crack between the worlds. You walked into your own interior. In meditation, and if you're someone who's willing to sit in meditation for a while, or if you're at a meditation retreat, which is where this kind of thing often happens, and you stay inside the Sushumna Nadi, letting yourself be drawn deeper and deeper into meditation, you can find that in the course of one single meditation, the Sushumna will unfold, and you flow from ordinary waking consciousness to a state of deep mystical awareness. Normally, this kind of unfolding happens when your eyes are closed. It's an indrawn, interiorized state. What unfolds, again, we mentioned the word for unfolding is labaha. It's kind of like unfurling, opening out the tightly contracted bud of your consciousness, unfurls and reveals the vastness that's concealed within it. What unfolds is the fullness of the self. One of my favorite parts of the tantras is this understanding that's in chapter 18 and also very much in the Vijnana Bhairava, in which the sages point to the fact that inside our bodies there are these portals, of which the Sushumna Nadi is the main one. There are these portals that we completely take for granted, but which, as we immerse ourselves in one of these portals, they open up and show us the depths of reality, like as if we stepped through the looking glass or through the wardrobe. Mystical sages, in what's often called twilight language, in other words, coded language that you can't understand unless you've either had the experience or have someone who can explain it to you. So Kabir, the great poet saint, wrote, "God is the breath within the breath," meaning God is the breath that begins to breathe you as the central channel unfolds. God is also the place between the inhalation and the exhalation. And one of the things that Kshema Raja tells us in the opening of chapter 17 is that once we accept the truth that awareness has become everything, once we are willing to believe it, at least believe it enough so that we can practice with this awareness, then what we discover is that we don't really need anything outside our own body and our own daily experience to realize the truth. It's all there inside the body. And that's, I want to say that again, it's all there inside the body. So, in other words, we don't need to visualize deities. We don't need to say esoteric mantras. And this is not to deny the fact that all these sages did a lot of deity practice and used mantras a lot. So all of the, you know, the working with the forms is an important part of tantric practice. But what Kshema is telling us, what the recognition sages tell us, is that even though the forms of deities and the mantras can be extraordinarily important in our unfolding, nonetheless, even if we never see a deity or never work with a mantra, the central channel can still unfold through just being attentive, interiorizing our consciousness through the breath. And I would say, you know, just to expand that statement, that these realized sages actually did mantra practice, deity practice, meditation, esoteric meditation practices for fun once they had become self-realized. In other words, they didn't need to do it. All they really needed to do was turn their eyes, close their eyes, turn inside, find the presence in the Sushumna, in the central channel, and open their eyes and go about their lives. But because these mantras and the deity forms are such extraordinary repositories of bliss, they also did practice it. They also did devotional practices and worked with the powers and mantras. So in Sutra 18, which is kind of the repository of yogic practices for people like you and me that Kshema Raja describes, in Sutra 18, Kshema Raja introduces the project by saying, the methods for expanding the madhya, the center, are now taught. And he explains that he's already told us, he's already given us the Shambhavupaya approach to self-realization. That is, he's already told us that by recognizing our authorship of the fivefold act, by examining our own process of perception and thinking and recognizing how it is an expression of Shiva Shakti's fundamental activity, we can directly realize our oneness with Shiva. But he now says, okay, that's a terrific method, and that's the method of direct self-recognition. Nonetheless, it's not the only method. Here are these easy, comfortable practices that don't require us to go through these arduous yogic disciplines like pranayama and ritual and, you know, intense cleansing practices as in the classical Hatha Yoga tradition. We can just do these natural non-dual focuses, foci. For instance, tuning into the space between the breaths, recognizing the flow of energy in the chakras, finding the portals in daily experience. So just take a moment now before we go into these practices. And we'll start to bring our attention into the central channel. One of the practices that I really like for becoming aware of the central channel is to start by focusing in the third eye. That is, breathing in with the feeling that the breath comes in through the nostrils, flows upward through the nasal cavity, and begins to touch, because, you know, breath has a lot of power in it, as you know, begins to touch the center above the soft palate in the middle of the head. So with the inhalation, feel as though the inhaled breath brings your attention into the sixth chakra, the third eye center. you can locate it on the outside of the body as the point between the eyebrows, but on the inside of the body, in the middle of your head. It's actually right above the soft palate. Accessible through the breath and the nasal cavities. So breathe as though now, as though the breath is coming in through the space between the eyebrows, touching the third eye. See if you can station your attention in the middle of the head, in the place of the third eye, and then imagine that you're looking straight down from that place, straight down through the center of your body to the area in front of your coccyx. And then with the next inhalation, feel the breath flowing from the third eye center down through the middle of the body to the region right in front of the coccyx. Don't worry if you're finding the right place. It doesn't matter. It's the gesture of vertical breathing that starts to open and settle you into the Madhya Nadi. So here's the Sanskrit. Remember, these are names for these different esoteric practices. Vikalpa Kshaya, Shakti Sankocha Vikasha, Vaha Chedayanta, Koti Nibalanandaya, Iho Paha. Translation, the skillful means here are 1. Dissolving mental constructs. 2. Contraction and expansion of energy. 3. Pausing the flows. 4. Focusing at the beginning and end points. And so on. You can see why we need the commentary. This sutra actually describes or contains a whole bunch of different practices. And the first one, Vikalpa Kshaya, meaning dissolving mental constructs, is a practice that we've met a few times before. In fact, it's essentially what we've been doing all along, becoming aware of our own awareness and allowing ourselves to feel into awareness and identify with awareness rather than taking the thoughts that are arising as seriously as we normally do. The Kalpa Kshaya is, well, when I first started practicing Vikalpa Kshaya, as the Prajnabhijna Hridayam describes it, I found very useful the words of J.G. Krishnamurti, which are actually quoted in Jaidev Singh's translation of the Prajnabhijna Hridayam. What J.G. Krishnamurti used to describe this as bare awareness or choiceless awareness. Choiceless awareness is the practice of allowing yourself to be present with whatever is arising without choosing to focus on one thing or another, especially on not choosing to focus on your thoughts. And of course, in the Yoga Sutras, the definition of yoga in the second sutra of the Yoga Sutras, yogas citta vritti nirodaha, yoga is the dissolution of the thought waves of the mind, you know, it's not only a core verse of yoga, it also is the source of huge misunderstanding about what it means to, so to speak, succeed in yoga. What I find really interesting about what Kshema Raja says here as he talks about dissolving vikalpas, vikalpas being thought constructs, he gives it as a practice, not as the goal. Because remember, in Tantra, the point is not to eliminate your thoughts, it's to immerse yourself in the awareness that is present behind thoughts, beyond thoughts, holding thoughts. And as every yogi every great meditator can tell you, this process of being able to recognize the awareness beyond thoughts is easiest when thoughts dissolve. Vikalpa Kshaya is a very simple practice. You just sit. This is how he says it. You just sit. Seamus says in his commentary, one whose mind is fixed on and taking refuge in the heart, in the center of consciousness. And for us right now, that's the central channel. For one whose mind is fixed on and taking refuge in the center of consciousness, the heart, by thinking of nothing in particular, stills the conceptual thinking of the mind. And it's vikalpas, which are the main block in allowing awareness to abide in itself. One who practices like this and comes into conscious contact with pre-discursive reality becomes intent on the perception that the divine knower is his own awareness, unstained by identification with the body, and so on. So what are the stages here? How do you do it? First of all, you sit. We're all sitting, right? You bring your awareness again and again to awareness itself, either through the practice that we did at the beginning of class or through immersing yourself in the central channel, bringing your awareness inside to the central channel. And really letting go of thoughts. So your intention is to not let the mind get caught in a thought. And again, those of you who have spent long periods of time sitting in meditation will know that when you sit for a certain amount of time, for me at this point it's around half an hour. When I first started meditating, it was about an hour and 15 minutes. If you sit long enough, thoughts will slow down and stop. There'll be a few thoughts, but they won't be serious. You know, you won't feel taken out by them. In other words, just sitting, as the Zen students say, just sit, the mind will settle just the way the Coke bubbles settle in a glass when you let the Coke sit for long enough. Or maybe the bubbles in the beer, the foam in the beer settles. The thoughts are the foam on the water of consciousness. If you just let yourself get quiet, they still. So as you keep consciously bringing attention past the thought forms to the awareness, to the Sushumna Nadi, a shift happens and we're no longer identified with the body-mind. Our identification with the body literally dissolves into awareness, into the knower, because it becomes obvious in deep meditation that who we are is not the thoughts. So this is how you do it. Thoughts arise, you let them go. Thoughts arise, you let them go. You focus past the thoughts towards the quality of knowingness that lets you recognize them. You know, it's a little bit like the way you find the hidden pattern in those hologram pictures that used to be popular. You know what I mean? There'd be a geometric pattern. If you focus your eyes on the sides of the picture, then a shift would happen and the figure of a unicorn or a castle would kind of emerge out of the geometric pattern and take over the foreground. So it's the process of Vikalpa Kshaya, resting in awareness, is very similar. And there are some physical tricks that we use, which, you know, I teach sometimes, that you can kind of reset your attention. So, you know, for instance, you can let yourself feel that you're seeing with whole field vision, like opening your eyes so that you take in what is on either side of you and in front of you. It's the opposite of tunnel vision. Or you can even imagine that you're looking from behind your body. Or you can focus on the spot about 8 inches above the head, 12 finger widths above the head, which we'll be working with a little bit later. and there are many others, or you can just remind yourself, what is aware? Who is seeing? Who is knowing? And again, we've discussed this before, if you ask yourself one of those self-inquiry questions, this is like, what is it that knows I'm thinking? And pay attention to that little blank moment at the end of the question before a verbal answer has arisen. At that moment, which may only last a few seconds, you're in touch with pure awareness. I want to just offer you my favorite self-inquiry question, and we can just work with it for a minute. This is a micro meditation, a speed meditation. Actually, we're going to do it for less than a minute. We're going to do it for about 30 seconds. So here's the question. Without thoughts, without ideas, without memories, without emotions, what am I? If I don't use thoughts, if I don't define myself through emotions, if I don't have memories, if I don't have ideas, what am I? What is I? Just tune into the space that arises. Without thoughts, without ideas, memories, emotions, what is I? We've been, of course, working with Vikalpa Kshaya in different ways all through this class. And basically, the practice of letting go of thoughts or dissolving thought constructs basically happens in a couple of ways. One is the practice that we were just doing, that is sitting in meditation and letting them dissolve, or asking inquiry questions that inspire you to become aware of awareness. The other is by a process similar to what we started doing week before last, when we worked with dissolving samskaras, and that is to challenge your concepts about yourself, that to start to recognize the constructs that really trap you, the constructs like, you know, I'm a member of the Kempton family, or I'm a woman, or, you know, I'm a teacher, I'm a writer, I'm smart, I'm stupid, I'm unlovable, I'm good looking, all those things, you know, positive and negative. Every time one of them comes up, if we're doing this practice, you know, in a serious day-to-day way, you challenge it. You ask yourself, is this really me? And you kind of get into the habit of noticing what you identify with and actually doing the work of dissolving that idea that you're identified with for the moment. And as you go on challenging your concepts about yourself and returning your attention to the context of your experience, to awareness, the vikalpas that really trap you start to become less and less intense. And you have many, many moments, I'm going to say it, of not exactly knowing who you are, because your attention is so much more spacious than it is when you're tightly identifying with this character. And again, placing your mind in the heart, really most skillful ways to place your mind in the heart is to do this practice that we were doing at the beginning of cycling through sound, sensation, breath, feeling, thoughts, letting yourself be mindful of each of these different parts of your experience, and then turn your mind to mindfulness of awareness itself. According to most scholars, in other words, what most of the scholars of Tantra, this is what Kshema means by placing the mind in the heart. He means cultivating a steady awareness of your own awareness. However, in the next practices that he talks about, and in my own experience, and I'm sure in your experience, placing your mind in the center of the chest, in the heart center, in the hridaya, or in the center in the lower belly, the hara, the dantian, or placing your mind in the center called the dwadashanta, which is 12 finger widths above the head in the sahasrara, all of these are often referred to in Tantra as the heart. So remember, the heart is a center within which consciousness can expand. And placing your attention into the heart, the belly, the third eye, the dwadashanta, or, of course, the sushumna, are all effective ways of anchoring your attention in the madhya, in the center of being, because each one of them is a portal into expanded awareness. Now, the second thing that Kshema makes in his commentary in the sutra is to think of nothing. And this obviously is not something that you can do right off the bat. Again, this is an issue that we've been working with strategies for since the beginning of the class. My favorite strategy for working with thoughts is to just look at them as energy, as chitti. To every time a thought comes up and I start to get involved in it, I just remind myself this thought is made of mind stuff. This thought is made of chitti shakti. And this, again, as I hope you have discovered through practice, will interrupt that process in which you single out a particular thought and get completely involved in it, so that you're believing it, you're worrying about it, you're defining yourself according to the thought. It doesn't mean that you're not going to get distracted by thoughts. That's obviously part of the process. But if you label every thought that arises as shakti, as chitti, as energy, what you actually do is dismiss the significance of the individual thoughts. You kind of defang them. Oh, this horrible, nasty memory, you know, about what my boyfriend said to me before he walked out on me. That's just a thought, and it's made of energy. And in fact, even though the energy of this thought might contract me, nonetheless, it's just energy, and I can work with it as energy and return my mind to awareness. So we find strategies for defanging our thoughts, which might be something like seeing the thoughts as shakti or remembering to be the witness of them. The next point he makes in this commentarial sentence is, and this is really cool, he says we should become engrossed or enraptured with the felt sense of experience, any experience, before a thought arises to explain it. So in other words, when you turn your attention inside and you manage to elude that mechanism which is going to tell you, you know, I'm inside and this is a good feeling or this is not a good feeling, when you turn inside, what you eventually begin to recognize is what he calls avikalpa paramarsha. Avikalpa means no thoughts. Paramarsha means the reality that we can feel before the mind starts to label and explain it. So we're going to try it for a minute now. And let's do it by bringing our mind into the center behind the breastbone. So close your eyes. Follow the breath. And with the inhalation, let yourself start investigating the feeling of the energy inside your heart center. Just feel around in the energy of the heart behind the breastbone, sensing the feeling there, and you want to try to avoid labeling the feeling. Just tune into how it feels. Thoughts will come up, of course, so just remember, thoughts are made of energy. They're just mind stuff. And see if you can bring your attention into the feeling, the felt sense of the mind field itself. One thing I really like to do, although this is more complicated than what Kshema is telling us, is to imagine an opening or a softening inside the field of your mind, the field of your heart. And imagine that you, as attention, move through that opening towards the back of the heart, moving backward through the energy of the heart center, as though you were traveling inside that field of Avikalpa Paramarsha, the felt sense of your own heart field, your own mind field, which is citta. How does it feel? Now at this point, you may be able to slow down enough to sense how a thought emerges out of this field and then stays for a while and dissolves back into it. Or how my voice kind of impinges on that mind field, hopefully in a pleasant way, but for some of you, maybe won't feel so pleasant. Now, as you sense into that field of the heart, notice that part of the mind that is aware of what you're doing. Just notice it. And recognize that the awareness that makes your experience possible is Shiva Shakti. Notice that you couldn't experience my voice or the heart field without that awareness. Notice that awareness remains the same. Even when the mind is full of thoughts, awareness isn't touched. And isn't it also true that if you can be comfortable, if you can let it be okay to simply be present with your internal experience without judging it or trying to change it. You're just able to be with what is. You do start to experience a kind of relaxation and an expansion. And you might even begin to sense your awareness expanding through the body boundaries. You might even be able to turn attention back on itself. And you might even experience this kind of shift into identification with that field itself, with that awareness itself. This is something that unfolds on its own. In other words, it's not something that you have to make happen. It's something that can happen and that eventually does happen as you sit and focus on the field that is present. Out of which thoughts emerge and into which they dissolve. and become aware of the knowingness that is subtler and deeper even than the field of the mind. So moments of vikalpakshaya, moments of thoughtlessness, of course, occur naturally from time to time in the course of a day. And we're going to be working with some of them over the course of the week. What Kshema is suggesting is that whenever we experience a second or two of thought freeness, you know, maybe when you've been walking really fast or playing a fast game of tennis, at the end of the activity, there's a kind of expansion and relaxation and a quietness, of mental quietness. Or when you're working really hard and you get up from the computer to take a break and the intellect has been so concentrated, just relaxes. And there's a moment of spaciousness. So plunging every time you experience that into identification and recognition of it is one of the processes that lets contracted consciousness to ease back into its own self, its own state. So take a deep breath in and a strong breath out. And we're going to talk about the second strategy that Kshema Raja mentions, which is called Shakti Sankocha and Shakti Vikasha, the expansion and contraction of Shakti, of energy. And these are quite interesting and esoteric practices. He defines them as becoming more conscious of your own energy by turning awareness backwards even when your eyes are open and you're interacting with the world. And what this is in, you know, in our normal life is the very simple practice of keeping a part of your attention inward, focused inside, while you're doing other stuff. And I think for many of you, that this is something that has become very natural to you over your years of practice. You know, as you become more and more self-aware, you learn how to monitor your own energy. You learn how to notice when you're so outer-directed that you're losing touch with yourself and to bring your attention inside instead of letting all your energy go outward when you're in a conversation or when you're, you know, functioning in the world. You learn how to keep a part of it inward, whether through Sushumna Nadi practice, through centering in the heart, through centering in the inner dantian. So Shakti Sankocha, the contraction of Shakti, means that you withdraw into the center in whatever way you do that while continuing to interact with the physical world. In other words, it's basically an instruction to turn inside. And for most of us, there are a couple of practices that we tend to work with that help us stay centered. Maybe the mantra for many of you. For me, it's always been focus in the heart, something I discovered fairly early in my practice, that if I turn my attention to the heart center, that it helped me stay kind of in touch with myself. If you're a martial artist or a Qigong practitioner, you probably learned how to feel into the energy in the Dantian, the Hara, the center below the navel. You probably have noticed how your interactions are different when you've centered yourself in the heart or the central channel or the Dantian. And you may also notice, and I want to ask you to pay attention to this in the week to come, how your interactions are different when you're inwardly focused. When I lived in Gurmai's ashram years and years ago, there would be moments when I would be in a meeting with her and a small group of people, and I would be, you know, and the conversation would be going on, and I would have something I wanted to say, a contribution I wanted to make to the conversation, and I would say it, and I would notice that she absolutely behaved as though I hadn't said a word. And this happened again and again, and it always kind of felt frustrating and hurt my feelings. And then one day I centered myself in the heart before I spoke up. And it was really remarkable. Gurma is a she's very energetically sensitive, as, you know, people who are highly practiced yogis often are. The moment I spoke with heart focus, she turned, listened to me, responded, took into consideration what I said. And at that moment, I realized that inner attention is actually the secret of personal power, you know, to say words that have meaning to people. It's a very interesting process to come to know the difference between how your life is when you're focused on the heart or on the sushumna or on the hara, and how your life is when you're just letting all of your energy flow outward. Kshema also recommends a more intense practice where you literally withdraw all your energy to the inside. And this practice is particularly effective when you're feeling an intense emotion like anger or fear or extreme happiness, and it's one of the important tantric teachings. In other words, when an intense feeling or emotion is coming up, fear is a good one, because they're, you know, those emotions or anger, they're so seductive that instead of trying to soothe yourself or talk back to it, you literally bring your attention totally into the feeling of that emotional intensity. And you focus inward as though you were pointing an arrow into the center of the emotion. That's another form of shakti sankocha, contraction of shakti. And again, this is not something that we do. It is a practice that works best if we do it when we're feeling the emotion. But what happens when you draw your energy into the heart of an emotion while letting go of your thoughts about it, letting go of your story, which is crucial, what happens is that energy that's locked up in that intense emotion becomes available and starts to expand your consciousness. So again, this is an open-eyed practice that you do with intense concentration when your intention is to turn everything, including your very intense emotions, into a means of unfolding consciousness. Okay, now here's the next practice in this sequence. This is called Shakti Vikasha. So you start with following the breath as it moves vertically. We're going to do a practice of tuning in again to the central channel. So find the third eye center. Breathe into the third eye. And then allow your inhalation to draw your attention through the center of the body from the third eye down to the coccyx, and then with the exhalation back up to the third eye. Just let your awareness and the breath flow along this vertical channel, the central channel. Now, with your awareness pointed down through the central channel, really centered there, open your eyes and take in the room while keeping your attention inward. So your eyes are open, but your attention is in the central channel. Your attention is inward. This practice is called, in the tantras, it's called Bhairavi Mudra or Shambhavi Mudra. Bhairavi and Shambhavi are both names of Shakti. And it's a very important posture of enlightened beings. Your eyes are open. Your but your attention is inside. And if you look at the classic photos of Ramana Maharshi or Ramakrishna or my guru's guru, Nityananda, you see that their eyes, when you look into their eyes, it's like there's this huge stillness behind their eyes, which I think when we look at photographs of awakened beings, we are often aware of that, the way their eyes seem to take us right into the self if we focus on them hard enough. What allows that experience is the fact that they're in Bhairavi Mudra. Their eyes are open, they're looking at you, but their attention is completely inside. There are a couple of other practices that work with specifically with Shakti Sankocha Vikasha, which I'm going to give you as homework, where we work with the breath and the mantra, moving our attention between the heart and the Sahasrar. What Kshema says in his commentary on this is by nourishing the energy of the upper kundalini and the lower kundalini, we unfold these centers. And what I want to do is practice for a moment with the lower kundalini. The practice of nourishing the energy in the lower kundalini is actually it's the esoteric sexual practice. That's one of the hidden secrets of tantric practice. And because it's a secret practice, Kshema doesn't describe it in too much detail. I'm going to describe it to you in the way I do because I've had a spontaneous experience of it. So what I'm going to describe is the way I've understood this practice through my own personal experience and also through reading and hearing some of the commentaries of interpreters of Kshema Raja. So what he says is by nourishing the energy in the lower kundalini, which remember is the energy that's rooted in the Muladhara chakra at the base of the body, there occurs an immersion into sensation at the levels of its root, tip, and center. So lower kundalini is kundalini in the second chakra. The root is the perineum, that little knob of flesh between the anus and the sexual organ. The tip is the tip of the penis or the tip of the clitoris. And the center is the center of the pelvic bowl, which is, you know, also the place of the second chakra. It's about an inch above the upper edge of the pubic bone, but in the deep heart of the body, and it's also the place of the dantian. In martial arts practice, in qigong, in zen, their cultivation is of dantian. It's of really the center that the lower kundalini flows into as it starts to enter the sushumna. It's a very, very grounding practice, and it is also a practice for actually activating kundalini. In women, by the way, the space of the lower dantian at the top of the pubic bone actually corresponds to the mouth of the cervix, which is one reason why this center is known in esoteric tantric literature as the mouth of the yogini. Yogini is a word for kundalini. It's a word for the goddess. And it's also, of course, a word for the female practitioner. So this place, the center in the dantian, is a major place of concentration of shakti. Immersion into sensation is code for the sensation of sexual arousal that you use as the shakti basis for this practice. So I want to tell you a little bit about my own experience of the practice and how to translate it, so to speak, into something that we can do. So for me, the experience that gave me insight into what this sutra talks about happened as a result of, of a prolonged practice of a goddess mantra that I did while on retreat. And I was actually breathing with the mantra into the three main centers in the body, inhaling with a few syllables of the mantra into the belly center, into this, you know, the dantian, exhaling into the heart, inhaling into the heart, exhaling into the third eye, inhaling into the third eye, exhaling with the feeling that the breath and the energy and the mantra spilled down through my body and activated my whole body. So, and I was doing this practice, which is it's a Sushumna Nadi practice that works with the three centers. We've actually, some of you who've practiced with me have done this particular practice with me with different mantras. After I had done this, after I'd sat in meditation with this practice for a while, the Sushumna Nadi would start to open and expand. And one day, my lower body began to vibrate with this intense feeling of pleasure, sexual pleasure. And then the energy began to rise and spread through my entire body as an intense, all-over experience of delight. I actually described it to myself afterwards as the feeling that as if the goddess Kundalini was making love to me from inside. And it was a spontaneous internal meditation. It's also something that you can cultivate. But I would consider, if you're going to do this practice, I would consider it cultivation rather than sexual foreplay. And this is the way it works. Remember, we're talking about Shakti Sankocha Vikasha, the contraction and expansion of Shakti. You feel into the expansion of the energy as it spreads through the body with the intention to allow the energy to rise and widen rather than having the thought of discharging it genitally, which is what we normally do with sexual arousal. So you don't, you know, it's not that you should try to control the flow of the energy. It's just that you should follow its natural movement, which is going to be to expand and rise. Kshema uses the metaphor of Shakti spreading through the body the way an elixir or a poison spreads through the body. It's a very, very subtle. But eventually, that energy, that sexual energy, which is the activation of lower Kundalini, begins to be felt throughout every pore of your body. If you're interested in doing this practice, I have a version of it in the chapter on Goddess Lalita in my book, Awakening Shakti, and it actually follows Kshema's instructions here in a kind of a granular way. And I will send you a version of this practice in the homework. The last practice is that we'll work with, and we're going to end with it, is called Adyantakoti Nibbalana, focusing on the beginning and end point of the breath. This is, I would say, my favorite daily practice. And it's the day-to-day version of the Sushumna Nadi practice, in which we connect the heart center with the Sahasrara, the center above the head. So we're going to practice that right now. Let's just take advantage of the cultivation we just did with the root and feel the triangle formed by the pubic bone and the two sits bones with the perineum in the center. And as you take your seat, sway your body backwards and forwards until you feel centered above that triangle. Now, with your hands, if you need to, find the center in the heart by placing your palm over the breastbone and then bringing your attention into the body, into the very center of the body. So the heart center in the subtle body, the heart chakra, is a couple of inches to the right of the physical heart. Now, find the Dwadashanta, the space 12 fingers above the head. And the way you do this, I know many of you know how to do this, is you place the four fingers of your right hand vertically against the fontanelle, against the crown, with the side of the index finger against the head and the other three fingers rising vertically from that. Then you take your left hand and you place it, you place the side of your left index finger against the pinky of your right index finger. So you now have 8 inch, you know, you have measured 8 finger widths above the top of the head. And then leaving the left hand in place, you move the right hand again so that the side of the index finger is against the side of the pinky finger. And then you notice the spot that you've measured. So you can, you know, just point to that spot 12 finger widths above the crown. And with, you know, take one of your hands and put it there just to anchor the spot, and the other hand on your breastbone. And just take a moment or two as you follow the breath. Breathe in. Feel the inhalation coming to rest behind the breastbone in the heart center. Exhale. And see if you can feel the exhalation flowing up through the top of the head, coming to rest there above the crown. And just continue to follow the breath. You might want to bring your hands down to your lap or place them on your thighs in your normal meditation posture. And begin to feel the breath moving between the Dwadashanta, 12 finger widths above the crown, and the heart. After a few minutes, have the intention to feel as though the breath is flowing in through the top of the head, as though it's flowing from the Dwadashanta. Flowing through the top of the head into the heart, and flowing from the heart up through the center of, through the throat, through the head, flowing into the Dwadashanta. Now see if you can keep your attention first in the heart, then in the Dwadashanta, and just feel the breath flowing between these two spots. At this point, the flow of the breath is not important. What's important is that the breath is giving power to your attention as you allow your attention to open up your awareness of the heart behind the breastbone and the heart above the crown. You may notice that your attention wants to take rest in one of these places, perhaps in the heart, perhaps in the upper Dwadashanta, the space above the crown. So let that happen naturally if it wants to. We're discussing practices for expanding the center, the madhya, the true center of consciousness. And again, when he talks about the center, Kshema Raja is referring both to consciousness itself, pure awareness itself. He's also referring to the central channel. And he's also referring to these core chakras, the heart, the Sahasrara or upper Dvadashanta, and the lower Dantian, the seat of the lower Kundalini, the resting Kundalini. And what he's offering us is a series of practices, of upayas, each in their different way, a method for expanding your sense of being centered, of being in the heart of consciousness, the heart that is expressed in that space behind the breastbone when you rest there, and that expands in the space above the crown when you rest there. What we're talking about in this verse, in this sutra, is a set of practices that are the vehicles through which consciousness returns to itself, through which Chitti Shakti expands back into her original freedom, her original transcendent state. The merging of our attention into the center through meditation will occur again and again and again. We do the practices, we enter into deep meditation, we learn how to enter into deep meditation, which for many of us takes some practice, and then we come out of it and we go about our lives. And what we discover in this mysterious fashion is that by internalizing awareness, by becoming aware of these portals into consciousness herself, the samskaras, or the vikalpas of limitation, begin to dissolve. And again, this takes place over time. And new samskaras, the samskaras of interior awareness, begin to be formed. So that little by little, we begin to have the experience of coming out of meditation and being able to retain our connection to the madhya, to the center within us. And this is the way in which liberation, self-realization, samavesha, as it's called in the tantras, meaning the penetration into the equanimity of pure consciousness. That's how this process gathers power and eventually becomes our default experience. So in our next class on March 7th, our bonus class, we're going to explore Sutra 19 and Sutra 20, which describe the experience of self-realization. This is what Kshema says, and we're going to end with this quote, this verse. He says, when emerging slowly from deep meditation, while still feeling its effect, contemplate your oneness with awareness. Practicing this again and again, you will attain a samadhi that continually arises. So he's describing this advanced state where you're able to go into meditation in a very deep way and then cultivate the aftertaste again and again. And here are his words. The tantric yogi who has attained immersion into the madhya, into the center, swaying blissfully with the afterglow of the sweet taste of samadhi, sees the mass of existent things dissolving into the sky of awareness, like wisps of autumn cloud, again and again taking the support of inward-facing consciousness touching pure oneness with awareness, eventually there is no longer a post-meditation state. He has become one for whom samadhi is the single taste of reality. So this is where we're going. This is where each of us is heading. And have a wonderful week. We're going to you have homework and partner practices, and you have 2 weeks to work with them. And we will reconvene for our bonus class on March 7th at 5 o'clock. And like all of our classes, that can be attended live, or if you can't attend it live, it can be downloaded. And in that class, we will do the wind-up, the final immersion in the Shakti of the recognition tradition. Thank you so much for being here, for practicing. Have a beautiful week. Namaste.